Welcome to the new Cyber Frontier, bringing you the latest news on the local Colorado economy and initiatives that focus on the development of cybersecurity economics. You don't have to be a computer or cybersecurity expert to get plugged in. Your host, Chris Gorog, brings it straightforward, asks the tough questions, and brings the cyber world to a level of understanding for everyone. Chris is personable and opens up with our guests on issues we all would like to see addressed. You can find us on the web at www.newcyberfrontier.com. Now join our host as he introduces the topic for today's New Cyber Frontier.
Welcome to today's episode of New Cyber Frontier. Today's show, we're going to talk about intelligence and information sharing and identify a little bit of what is, you know, the state of the industry there and how and when do companies need to do this and what it is if you're not familiar with it. So, but our guest today, Andy Piazza, is the threat analyst and security officer at FIA. Andy, welcome and thanks for joining today.
Hey, thanks, Chris.
Yeah, so Andy, give us your background. Tell us about what you've, how you got to where you're at. What's your life like? I know there's some military in there somewhere because I can tell by the big beard.
Yeah, originally I grew up in San Diego, right outside of Camp Pendleton, the Marine base. So shortly after 9/11, I joined the Army instead because the Marines looked a little too hard. So I joined the Army in 2003, actually to be an EOD guy, a bomb disposal. Those folks that watch Hurt Locker. Mm-hmm. Showed up, turned out to be a really hard school, and walked in with like 10 guys from boot camp, and they said one of us might graduate. We're like, nah, we're sticking together. A lot of us stuck together. We all became MPs when we failed out of bomb school. So I became a combat MP and went to Iraq for two wonderful years of back-to-back deployments that I volunteered for. Did some time there in wonderful Fort Leonard, Missouri in between my deployments, and then got lucky to come out here to the D.C. area up to the Army Intel headquarters where I got to be in charge of the security forces of a big Army Intel building. From there, I got to do a cool 6 months down and doing counter-narcotics down in Central America, which was a lot of fun. And that really exposed me to more of the threat side and less of just being a security guy with a gun. So I did my bachelor's in intelligence studies while I was still active duty after being exposed to the intel guys saying, I think I can do this. And I ended up doing a master's in intelligence. Got out as a security specialist for a short time. My company, FIA, hired me actually to be their security officer for the company and then also a security officer for a government client in the Pentagon. And while I was there, my CEO was like, hey, you seem like you're doing pretty good with this intelligence stuff. As I was working on my master's, you seem interested. You want to become a threat analyst on the cyber side? I was like, absolutely. I think that one, it was, around that time, 2011, 2012, there's a lot of, exploding in cyber jobs and got a really good opportunity to go support DHS and spend some time over there on their private partner information sharing program. A lot of people don't realize they have a really cool program over there with about 200 companies sharing threat intelligence. So I got to work with them and learn about, the challenges that organizations had ingesting threat intelligence and what that really means. And, hearing, they don't share enough or it's not timely and getting to work through some of those relationships for about 4 or 5 years. I've now moved on and supporting another client as a threat intelligence analyst, a big, huge global organization that will remain unnamed. I don't name my current clients, but been there. We've got an awesome team, about 20 analysts that I get to work with. And just, it's one of those jobs where I'm surrounded by some really smart people every day and kind of really motivated to go chase new challenges. We've got a lot of different things going on at our client from an enterprise standpoint. So it's a really cool opportunity to work new challenges with really exciting people. So that's where I'm at right now. And then I also help out with B-Sides Nova. I help run the event every year. We just did our third year here a couple months ago. Absolutely amazing opportunity, right, to connect with new people. A lot of folks coming into the field at the B-Sides events. So it's a really cool opportunity to be able to give back to a community that's really supported me as I've grown up in the career so far. So I guess that's where I'm at right now.
Yeah. So there's some things, and we're going to talk about these later in the show, but my first thing that comes to mind every time, and I've had several people talk, threat analysts, threat intelligence, information sharing analysis organizations that have come on the show. And I've, I was in the military, Navy as well years ago before information computing was really even a big thing. We got a network on the ship I was on like the year I got out of the military. So that always kind of happened. Intelligence has always been around, but it was a separate group of people. It wasn't the people you know, the computer stuff. But after the break, we're going to hear from our sponsors and come back and talk about what it is and how this relates to the real world, civilian world. But be right back.
Cyber Resilience Institute helps build strong cyber communities designed to prevent members from attack. Like building a neighborhood watch, it takes coordination and a sharing community to protect our identities and valuables in the virtual world. Typically, we hear that organizations know they need to do something to protect their cyber assets, but don't know where to begin. Let Cyber Resilience Institute help your community create an action plan. Cyber Resilience Institute will build your community or business marketplace so that it is designed to support a collective cyber defense. Contact them for more information at cyberresilienceinstitute.org.
All right, welcome back to New Cyber Frontier. We're talking today with Andy Piazza, who is a threat intelligence analyst at FIA. Andy, before the break, I kind of alluded to a question I had, because having been a design engineer and working for companies for several years, and I hear so many people that come out and talk about threat intelligence or information sharing that are so excited about it. And I look at, you know, my past experience in the civilian world, and it hasn't had much relevance at all. So how is it that that this relates to what we see if we're not, you know, military focused, background in military? Give us kind of your thoughts on that.
Yeah, so I'm really passionate specifically when it comes to threat intelligence about making it consumable, building a program at your organization that makes sense for your organization. Like, DoD is amazing at security, the law enforcement community, the intelligence community, they're all really good at what they do, but they have a different capability and legal authorities than what your organization will do if you're a private sector company or, you know, another federal department or agency. You know, building a program that makes sense. One of the things that drove me crazy when I was in Iraq is, as a combat MP driving around, we got blown up a lot. We never really got intelligence on the environment. What we knew was from what we knew. It wasn't from this amazing intelligence apparatus. That always went to leadership and decision makers. But in your organization, in everybody's organization, you got to ask that real question. Who's your real decision makers when it comes to cybersecurity? It's your folks on the keyboard. It's not your board. They're making decisions about budget. But whether or not that phishing email is getting clicked on, your decision makers are the people receiving the emails and the SOC analysts that are responding to it. So if I'm a threat intelligence analyst and I make this really cool PowerPoint and I go brief the executive board about this really cool phishing campaign, we saw it totally annihilate our network. That didn't help any. But if I see that campaign and I can have a way into, you know, the SOC is one of my stakeholders, or I can feed into, you know, a newsletter, or, you know, do most staff know that around February through June, you're going to see tax-related spear phishing? First, you're going to see W-2s, and then you're going to see the correction form. I can't think of the name of the form afterwards, but you see that from February to June. Those are things that threat intelligence analysts know, and the SOC probably knows. But how do we feed that back out to your real stakeholders or are your employees on the keyboard, right? I support, as a security officer for my company, I support a company that's constantly trying to hire new candidates. We see resume-themed spear phishing. I can't just tell my HR staff, don't open any emails that say resume. We would stop as a business, right? So it's like, how can I educate them and what to look for? Someone cold reaching out with a resume and your information's not public, like we have a public distro and a way to apply it to our system. So if my COO is getting an email directly from a person he's never met before, that's something that can slow him down. So I think threat intelligence at the consumer level, right? I'm not talking, if you're a security vendor, you're going to do some cool stuff. Mm-hmm. Law enforcement, right? Completely different. You're just trying to consume threat intelligence and drive your own threat intelligence from your environment. You got to be asking, how do I inform the people that are getting attacked every day? You know, and without, you know, boy who cried wolf, or, you know, the sky is falling all the time. What are those trends that we can tell them? We can't just constantly tell them, you know, don't click the link. Mm-hmm. Cause we have to click links, right? We, you know, invoice is a huge theme for spear phishing. I can't tell the finance department not to open invoices. That wouldn't work. So how do I teach them, you know, what do these emails actually look like? Is it spoofing somebody that you normally get an email from? What is spoofing, right? It looks funny. It looks like it came from that guy, but it came from his Gmail instead of his corporate account. That's kind of weird. Or his corporate name is on the left side of the at symbol instead of the right side of the at symbol. you know, those are the things that, you know, intelligence can help educate into your security awareness program. If you're a smaller company, you know, maybe your security awareness program is your threat intelligence analyst. You don't need a separate education shop. You know, it's really about resource management in a lot of ways too.
Okay. So if I had to say, a good example is that headhunter, that placement agent looking at resumes all day, right? Looking at trends I've seen, his whole life revolves around getting placements, reading resumes, understanding that part. He gets this little piece of information from a threat person in the company. The relevance to him is small, you know, because it's right. Not really his job. And that's almost more of, you know, they say education, 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 change your password, write complex passwords. You hear this pounded into everybody. But the person doing their job all day really cares about their job they're doing. And that person bothering them about what they shouldn't be doing is, you know, outside of their realm of thought. And even if it does come, you know, the odds say that even when we do provide them that information, you know, 60% ignore it anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of like
a challenge anyway, because we've been educating that for 10 years and we're still clicking away. And
yeah,
you can click the link to half the time you do a phishing exercise.
Yeah. I still reach for the relevance. But at the same time, I've also I've been involved with some information sharing analysis organizations and connected to US CERT for years and had access to feeds of information coming in. And when I start going through it, I look at it as to relevance, as it's kind of like listening to the police scanner from a million communities at the same time. And, you know, my job is reading resumes and getting people placed all day.
Right.
You know, to spend an iota amount of time, and the information inundation so big, it's just the whole using it in the company. I have all kinds of even organizations I'm involved with that do threat intelligence sharing and try to do it for the public and say, we're going to do it for events. We're going to do it to help everybody out. And I just see the resistance to adoption because of this. I'm not trying not to be sarcastic about it, but how does it really apply to me without inundating me? And I really don't get anything from it.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think, you know, from a security education point, awareness program, it can definitely become noise very quickly, right? I've actually focused more on, when I talk about threat intelligence from security awareness, more just saying, hey, here's the latest trend, right, to look out for. Mm-hmm. You know, one of our own company, you know, had the approach of, hey, this is the CEO, I'm in a very important meeting and you need to buy these gift cards for me, right? That actually hit our company and mm-hmm. thankfully, young lady spotted it and was like, hey, that's weird. It's a Gmail and not from our actual corporate email. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I was able to teach her and the rest of the team, like, there was a sense of importance, right? One, the sense of authority, but the sense of importance. I need this right now. We never buy gift cards for a government client. That's weird, right? But she actually initially was feeling the pressure to do it because it supposedly came from the CEO. So teaching people, like, hey, you can slow down and think, right? And teaching them actionable things, like just slow down and think through the problem. You know, we talk about business email compromise. I can send 1,000 examples, or I can say, if someone tells you to, you know, change a routing number, we need to change our procedure. You don't do that automatically. You pick up the phone and you confirm with that person.
We'll be with the rest of today's show right after these brief messages from our sponsors. Security Services are your cybersecurity experts with decades of experience providing professional training services for our clients in various industries. We offer professional training and certification in areas of cybersecurity, safety, health, and environmental services at our academy.
Our in-person and online training provides a collaborative environment where students can interact directly with instructors through live chats or in private classrooms. Visit MurraySecurityServices.com for more information.
So Andy, whenever I look at US CERT and all the information coming back, it's so much data that it's hard to really kind of dig into and use. What do you recommend that, if companies are looking at using threat intelligence or having a threat intelligence department, what kind of tools, systems, programs do you look at to narrow down that so it's usable?
So that's a great question, right? So I was actually on the US CERT team sharing a lot of that information, writing that stuff as a draft analyst in my previous life. And that's the thing is I found a lot of times we had senior managers and executives on the distro list instead of the analysts. That's why you need an intelligence analyst program is you need your analysts to churn through that stuff. Sometimes it's just throwing them in a threat intelligence platform, right? And there's a bunch of cool tools out there. I have an article out on Medium that talk all about, what kind of requirements you look at in your threat intelligence platform. So I won't beat it up too much. But that's a device that can bring in all those feeds. You can get the Stix taxi, all the XML, the CSV, a bunch of different formats, and you can start making sense of that. That's really what your threat analyst should be doing, in my opinion, from a consumer intelligence program. It's bringing that stuff in, tuning your feeds and tuning your security applications and security stack. To me, there's a bigger bang for your buck from your threat analyst teams to be the folks that are doing your threat management, bringing in all that threat reporting into a program, saying this is the high context or high confidence or meets our threshold to deploy out to IDS, IPS, and the rest of your security stack. And then the analysts start looking at the trends of those to say, what do we need to highlight for leadership and say, hey, the last 10 techniques went right through our security the last 10 emails because they have a new technique, right? We need to start talking about our security stack. But also those, it's those resume emails. Maybe you obviously can't block every resume email going to your HR department, but maybe you have a security stack where you can, if they hit certain keywords, they're going to go through the sandbox automatically and get detonated before they get to the user. Those are things that threat intelligence can inform if you've got threat analysts that are focusing on what's going on in your environment, right? Not trying to go out and collect and be, 007. That's not what you need. And the other problem too is intelligence, right? What does intelligence mean? Well, it's like saying medical field. Mm-hmm. You need a nurse, a surgeon. Like there are a bunch of different disciplines under intelligence. And that's why I really try to focus on like threat analysts. Coming from the military side, you're going to look more towards like your all source analysts, your SIGINT, depending on the type of analysis you really want done in your shop. Like, do I need a full reverse engineer shop and a malware lab and everything for a small company? Or do I need to get a simple sandbox where maybe just a vendor where I can upload suspicious files and have them detonate it for me? Do I need a dark web capability, or can I hire a company that does that brand monitoring stuff for us and we can give them a list of key terms and we can work with them? Mm-hmm. Those are the things that each organization has to kind of decide on their own. But I think that, threat analyst program can help them say, medium to large business starts off with 3 to 5 analysts, maybe 10 if it's a large business. And really gets focused on how do you make sense of the US CERT feed against the FireEye feed, against the CrowdStrike feed, and all these things. Don't just go in and buy every feed possible and throw it at a platform and say, oh my God, I've got a 90% false positive rate. That's going to happen. I've seen it in organizations. It will happen if you turn on everything. Mm-hmm. That your analysts will probably be crying because they're false positive rates. Not every report gets to go to the boss, right? The CISO doesn't need to be aware that US CERT published a new report. They do it all the time. What you see on the internet, on their website is like probably 20-30% of everything they actually publish. There's a lot of reporting that they share with the community through other programs and through the AISV, the Automatic Indicator Sharing Program. That thing's got millions of indicators going through that. I shouldn't be running to the executive board every time there's a new indicator, right? So getting a threat analyst that can do threat management, but they can also see the strategic and the higher level trends out of that and say, hey, we're getting pounded by this type of malware. I know you don't want to stop the business, but this rule in IPS could save us a bunch of time and money here if we move that rule from IDS to IPS, right? From alert to block. Mm-hmm. Or to the sandbox, like I said, the resume example. Everything with the word resume and it gets thrown at the sandbox.
Yeah. So if I step back and said, you know, so many things you're talking about, you know, you come from the government, doing this in the government background. Should these be, if we had a perfect world, these are social solutions, should they be in law enforcement? Should they be done by our government for the people? I mean, what, it just, it appears that, you know, and I know, you know, the current laws don't really have an agency that does this, and it's pushed off to the companies. But if you had an ideal world, how would you categorize that? You know, whose responsibility is this?
So ultimately, here in the great free states of America, it will still be unfortunately on private sector to do. But you do have government agencies that have great relationships with private sector, and they've got free services that they offer. I mean, you can get connected to AIS if you want indicator feeds from DHS, sorry, automated indicator sharing. You can hook up and get those for free. They're doing a bunch of analysis and pushing those out. You can actually do request malware analysis. You know, FBI and InfraGuard, there are a bunch of free programs or low-cost programs in the ISACs that are helping, right? And all those ISACs, you know, they share information with each other at certain levels. They share it with the government. You can get a lot of free resources as a government. You know, whether or not, yeah, sure, should your ISP probably block what obviously looks like a DDoS attack? That's obviously a really good question, I think, at the legal, you know, congressional level. If you know this is a big attack, at what point should we just be turning things off? You know, that's a hard answer, because businesses are going to be like, well, did you stop business? You cost me money, right? Mm-hmm. And some companies have a different risk threshold than other companies, and they should be making those decisions themselves ultimately.
Yeah. Well, it's definitely a topic that I think will be around for a while as to, yep, you know, how is this handled and everything.
But if you're talking about critical infrastructure, though, there should definitely, you know, energy sector has DOE, and they've got certain regulatory requirements to meet. Mm-hmm. You know, we could talk about that from a policy perspective, you know, for finance and other sectors, which they obviously have their own controls. But ultimately, you know, free business, they'd be making the decisions to protect themselves and, you know, get involved in more of those programs that can support them.
Yeah, definitely. Well, kind of in closing up, I wanted to give you an opportunity to tell us, you know, what FIA does, who should reach out to you, how could they get in contact with you, and what kind of services, things like that.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for the opportunity. So our company is a defense contractor. We also support private sector. We've done business with a number of companies and help them get programs off the ground, security, intelligence. You know, we have the website FIA Tech. Reach out to us. I'm on LinkedIn. I'm on Twitter as Killer Grizz, KLRGRZ. If you search Andy Piazza, you will find me. If you're interested and you're looking for a job in the DC area, we're also down in Florida and in North Carolina, and even some stuff up in Pekin, Minnesota. Yeah, I'm pretty easy to find in the military or on the internet. I will say the one big thing, if you're a military vet, check out VetSec, a really cool program that a lot of people are helping each other out and getting connected to education resources and job resources through VetSec. Been a member of them for a couple months now, and it's pretty awesome. And most importantly, if you are a manager or an executive, consider, you know, dropping one guy from the list for RSA and send 10 of your analysts to your local B-sides. That will have a better rate of return than that RSA trip ever will. I'm a huge fan of B-sides, not only as a lead volunteer for B-side Nova, but I really do believe that is what's going to secure your organization is investing in the little guy instead of the big guy. No offense, big guys.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Andy, for joining today. And you heard Andy Piazza on the
We hope you have enjoyed this episode of New Cyber Frontier. Remember, please follow and participate as New Cyber Frontier is supporting a grassroots community effort to empower the individual in the digital age. Check it out at privacyforthepeople.org. Also, make sure to join our mailing list so we can keep you informed. If you have an idea, if you have a question you would like to hear answered, or if you just want to get involved in what we're doing, reach out to us at newcyberfrontier.com. We also encourage you to visit our sponsors' links, because they are the ones that really make this show possible. We look forward to seeing you on the next episode of New Cyber Frontier.